Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and you know about the apparent murder of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi for writing critically about the Saudi Arabian government. And maybe you remember the incident before a congressional election in Montana last year when the Republican candidate Greg Gianforte body slammed a reporter from The Guardian. Do you remember that? Gianforte pleaded guilty to assault and got elected in spite of his attack, or maybe because of it. Yesterday, President Trump, after a week of helping the Saudis deny murdering one journalist, Trump campaigned for the re-election of the congressman who assaulted another.
But Greg is smart. And by the way, never wrestle him. You understand that? Never. Any guy that can do a body slam, he's my kind of... He's my guy.
And did he praise or insult the people of Montana by saying this?
And I heard about it. And we endorsed Greg very early. But I had heard that he body slammed a reporter. And he was way up. And he was way up. And I said, oh, this was like the day of the election or just before. And I said, oh, this is terrible. He's going to lose the election. Then I said, well, wait a minute. I know Montana pretty well. I think it might help him. And it did.
Wow. And did you hear the crowd cheering for body slamming a reporter? And it reminded me the way the president finished that thought about how it helped him win. It reminded me of what the president said on 60 Minutes just last week when asked about his mocking of Christine Blasey Ford.
Do you think you treated her with great respect?
I think so, yeah, I did.
But you seem to be saying that she lied.
You know what? I'm not going to get into it because we won. It doesn't matter.
Well,
we won.
I'm not going to get into it because we won. It doesn't matter. And with that, we welcome New York Times White House correspondent Katie Rogers. Hi, Katie. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
What was the context of Trump's remarks last night about Gianforte and body slamming?
I mean, I think you just introduced it pretty in a pretty straightforward manner. I think the context was praising the people of Minnesota. He does a brief, you know, sort of dog and pony show with every local candidate, local Republicans. He tends to praise them as in each state he goes to, by the way, smart cookies, rising stars. And Gianforte had the added appeal to the president, apparently, of putting his hands on a reporter and having a criminal record because of it. So this was in the context of praising the voters of Montana for electing Gianforte anyway.
He had just criticized Democrats in that speech, and I didn't pull this clip, but he had been criticizing them for being what he called an angry mob,
mm-hmm.
and then he praises a Republican member of Congress for physically assaulting a journalist. I guess mm-hmm. the irony was lost on him. This praising of Gianforte for body slamming as my kind of guy, it reminds me how Trump said he chose his defense secretary, James Mad Dog Mattis, who remembers this.
I'm proud to formally announce today my intention to nominate General James Mad Dog Mattis as the next Secretary of Defense.
He milked the nickname at many times, at many occasions at that time.
Which Mattis despises, by the way, that nickname.
And it turns out that the mad dog is actually more reasonable than his master in many ways. So he is falling out of favor, as Trump said last weekend, again on 60 Minutes.
It could be that he is. I think he's sort of a Democrat, if you want to know the truth. But General Mattis is a good guy. We get along very well. He may leave.
Katie, can you talk about if Mattis is on the ropes and what his place has been in reassuring the world that Trump won't do, you know, the worst of the worst things we might imagine?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Secretary Mattis has, you know, no intention of leaving that is detectable. But, you know, like all other officials in this administration, he seems to have to walk a pretty fine line between a president who sometimes overreaches with his public statements and what each secretary is either willing or capable of doing. So Mattis has found himself in between the president and the military, the president and the rest of the world. He's actually in China right now, trying to smooth over tensions and present the idea that the two countries should be stabilizing forces and not at odds with each other, which is obviously at odds with what the president has said and done lately to accuse China of election interference and exacerbate a trade war. So since the beginning of the administration, Mattis has had to kind of be a go-between between a president who kind of overreaches and what he's able to do. So, you know, he's certainly no, you know, dove, but he has also tried to take politics out of his job, which that's an additional weight when you're working for a hyper-partisan administration full of people like John Bolton, who are way more hawkish, way more in the president's ear about taking drastic measures.
Trump did talk yesterday, I understand, about deploying the military, 4,000 troops to the Mexican border. Is that a real thing?
Well, he's talked about sealing off the military, or he's talking about sealing off the border and using the military to do that, but he can't actually the military can't perform policing functions, full stop. So he can deploy National Guard troops, as other presidents have done, but he is, you know, this is another situation in which he is, you know, there are legal, you know, boundaries to what he can do, yet he's telling the world he wants to do this anyway.
And there has been video footage on TV this week of, you know, groups of people. I couldn't tell from the shot how many, whether it's hundreds or thousands, like they say, all walking together on a road, apparently headed toward the United States. So let's say the caravan is real. What would the National Guard do? I will at least assume that they won't shoot parents and children before separating them. But what would an armed force actually do about these wannabe refugee or asylum seekers?
You know, I think that they would contribute to policing functions, monitoring the border, and hopefully, you know, as these Central American nations have asked, you know, some of these people coming over have legitimate asylum concerns. So, you know, hopefully guard troops would be partaking in procedures that would identify people who really needed help and processing them. But, the argument the president and his advisors are making is, you know, this is just, it's too many people. We're going to yank aid. Don't send anyone. When in fact, it's way more complicated than that. And, you know, there were reports that General Kelly and John Bolton had a screaming match yesterday. You know, Bolton is way more in the president's ear about yanking aid. Kelly actually was the commander of Southcom, which included these countries. He is less willing to do drastic things like that because he knows the ramifications of pulling aid from these countries right away. So there are all of these different competing forces in this administration. None of them, you know, by the way, they're all ideologues to a certain extent on immigration, but they all have different frustrations and abilities to go about this.
Do you know anything more specific about that shouting match? It's quite, you know, quite an image, and it wasn't captured on film or anything that I know of, but I saw CNN talking about it. When you have the National Security Advisor, John Bolton, and the White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly, if they really did have a screaming match, do you know what it was about specifically?
Well, I think that the president is frustrated with his zero tolerance policies not curbing crossings. So numbers that are coming out show that, you know, even separating families, even, you know, threatening to seal off the border and pull aid is not stopping people to a large degree from trying to cross. So the president is super frustrated. He's facing midterms in 3 weeks, using immigration as his primary animator for voting, as he did during, you know, when he campaigned in 2016. So he is looking for information from his advisors that can point the right way forward. And I think DHS Secretary Nielsen's performance has been sort of a sticking point between Kelly, who actually knows a little bit about this stuff, and Bolton, who is relatively new to the administration and favors drastic measures. So that can be, that is very likely, you know, that has been a sticking point between them. And that is between two people who feel very strongly, likely an you know, an accelerant, I suppose I would say.
My guest for another few minutes is New York Times White House correspondent Katie Rogers. Katie, I gather you're working on a piece around a new book called Golden Handcuffs.
Yes, The Secret Lives of the Women Around Trump. Seemed like a good time to read the book and to revisit his comments, you know, this week about calling Stormy Daniels horse face and, you know, bringing up the old racially tinged Pocahontas moniker for Elizabeth Warren. I'm talking to Nina today and looking at, you know, how we have always known that this president, and back when he was a businessman, has used words like this toward, you know, women who dare to sort of speak up against him. For people who were shocked that this came from his Twitter account the other day, I mean, the point of the piece is really that they shouldn't be. There's all of this material going decades back that shows us that he's, you know, pretty distrustful of women who do not fall in line either with his business or policy aims.
You covered Melania Trump's trip to Africa last week, didn't you?
I think that was 2 weeks ago already, yeah. Which is insane, but I did.
And you had some interesting reporting from there, and she was, I mean, you know, considering what Trump has referred to those countries as, she was in some mm-hmm. pretty awkward situations.
She was, and I think that, you know, she used that trip to try to show us, I mean, this is not uncommon. First ladies use trips like these all the time, to present a softer lens on her husband's administration. But where Melania Trump has, you know, a larger obstacle is yes, these off-the-cuff disparaging comments her husband has made about African nations as, can I say that word on the radio?
We
all know what he said.
S-hole nations, yes.
Yes.
It's as close as we come.
You know, we had the chance to talk to her very briefly on the last day of her trip and ask her about this. And she actually took a very Trumpian stance, which is to say, you know, this was an anonymous source telling us this, and I don't believe it. I never heard it. So for all of the goodwill work the First Lady did during her trip, to me, it actually showed that she is much more in line with her husband than people tend to want to believe. She's no resistance figure.
Huh. To come back to Khashoggi just for a
sure.
minute, we've been talking for a year about when the President of the United States repeatedly calls the press the enemy of the people, mm-hmm. like he was a 20th century fascist. We can shrug it off to a certain degree in this country as bluster because we mm-hmm. have freedom of the press guaranteed in our Constitution. But we've talked about how it emboldens actual dictators in actual non-democracies to silence or even commit acts of violence against journalists reporting on them. And here we are with Saudi Arabia and Trump so far defending them rather than play the role the U.S. has always played in the past on something like this. The mm-hmm. implications of Trump and the Saudis, Trump and Gianforte, are sure. now really life and death. And I'm just curious if anyone in the White House press corps has asked him about his relationship between the words and his words, enemy of the people, et cetera, and the Saudis and other mm-hmm. governments' actions.
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, one interesting thing about the president is that he, you know, we all know he's super, super media savvy. He tends to beat the press at its own game a lot. And, you know, one of my suspicions about why he's dropped the explicit enemy of the people reference is so he can deliver, you know, four different interviews a day on top of a rally, on top of pool sprays ahead of the midterms. So he's dropped that explicit, you know, phrase, and he hasn't drawn questions for it because of that, which mm-hmm. is, you know, smart of him. But what he is doing is going on stage at rallies, retooling his messages on the press for different audiences. So back in Washington, he's telling reporters, you know, this is bad stuff. It's unfortunate that Khashoggi's death, you know, supposed death has caught, likely death, has caught the imagination of the world. He's not expressing sympathy for the loss of a human life over speaking out against an authoritarian regime. So he's retooling his messages to different crowds, and it's sort of, you know, catching him in bad timing situations like last night and, you know, hours after expressing sort of, oh, this is unfortunate that he's likely dead.
Katie Rogers, New York Times White House correspondent. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Still to come this morning, Radiolab looks at the 26th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution with a musical rendition. Stay with us.